And welcome back, our fabulous listeners. You bright, shining lights, you. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and also a big shout out to all our wonderful listeners in the Tron on Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, has ridiculously awesome amounts of information to share with us. Thank goodness for that. Her name is Evelyn Gilbert. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, just let me preface this. I know we're going to be talking about some dirty, horrible subjects here, but we've got FCC regulations, so there's several words that you can't say on radio, even though what the topics we're about to discuss, they are appropriate. John Key, our Prime Minister, could you tell us just a little bit about who he is?
I would say that he's a well-trained puppet from the international finance world. Well placed to help New Zealand down the drain, that for starters.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, as soon as he got elected, I was just like, oh well, here's the plug being pulled. And well, you know, I can just see all our freedoms, all our sovereignty, all our economic stability just going
down the gurgler. Yep. Do you know a writer by the name Edward G. Griffin?
Of course, sure.
Of course.
Yep. Well, for listeners who don't, he's a guy who wrote about the Federal Reserve, 20 years ago, and about how it was a private entity, and that it was a monopoly, a privately owned monopoly. I had a chance to talk with this guy 4 months before the elections, the New Zealand elections, and I said, well, the New Zealand population is going to elect a former Wall Street banker in as their prime minister. And he looked at me and he said, ah. And I said, care to enlighten me? He said, he's going to sell your country down the drain and throw his mother in with it. And when I said, do you think he's been primed? He's been, you know, they trained him to do this. He said, well, it has happened before.
And he has been he's been groomed like a thoroughbred scumbag.
Yeah. Yes, well, Edward Griffin.
I wasn't going to use that word.
A creature from Jekyll Island.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, great book. Great research.
Great
into
guy.
The founding of the third central bank of the United States, the Federal Reserve Bank, in 1913.
Exactly. Yep.
And incidentally, they have had the 100-year anniversary of the meeting at Jekyll Island, where many of the current and former heads of Federal Reserve and international bankers have met to, pat themselves on the back for 100 years of deception and tyranny and destroying world economies and that kind of thing. So they're just a lovely bunch of chaps, really. Who better to lead your country?
And so, Evelyn, you detail this all on your website, Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective. And you've been doing this for quite some time, haven't you, Evelyn? Would you care to enlighten us?
Well, I arrived in this country around about 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, and relatively quick after I arrived, I started to do research in both the politics of my new country, which I thought, you know, I wanted to know more about, and the events of 9/11 and international finance. So, yeah, that's about 5 years already.
So you were already interested prior to coming to New Zealand in these subjects?
I was very busy with trying to survive more than anything, but yes, I was. I was at the time of the events of 9/11 a special effects engineer and model maker, and I had a very rare day off. And when I was, you know, my husband called me and said, have a look, there is an attack in America, and I was looking at the towers going down at that moment, and I just thought, there is no way this could have happened naturally. This is a controlled demolition. So, yes, I've been interested ever since.
So being having the background you do, what do you think of the no-plane theories?
There were planes, simple. I mean, you know, there's... planes flew in the buildings. What I've recently published a paper about how it was a storyboard that was brought to life and real planes flew in the buildings. I'm not so sure about the Pentagon, but that will come to light one day. But in New York especially, two planes flew into the buildings and the buildings were collapsed with controlled demolition in the aftermath.
And in Pennsylvania?
I think this is just my personal theory. As of course, we love theorizing about this, but I think something went wrong with Building 3 and they had to get rid of the plane and just blew it up, basically.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I just threw it out there because you said you had a background in model making and what you worked in film and TV, did you?
We did mostly TV commercials, but we were specialized in real world special effects, where we had to basically, perform real world maneuvers with models, with motion controlled cameras, and the material we filmed was later used in commercials. So we weren't doing 3D animation or that sort of stuff.
So okay, in the real world, I mean, what do you have any experience in pyrotechnics or things of that nature?
Very minute amounts, because you were not allowed to work with real explosives, obviously, unless you had the proper permits. But we worked together with people who did those things, yeah.
Okay. Obviously, none of them managed to get their hands on any nanothermite, but...
I did have to do something with aluminium powder once, and it said, ooh, very dangerous, very dangerous. I was able to buy it at the time. And then I thought, I wondered why, and it was only when the thermite thing started that I thought, hang on a minute, I could have blown up the whole building with that stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty dangerous, that powdered aluminium, which is why they lovingly spray it all over our cities all the time in the form of chemtrails.
Exactly.
I'm going to set the sky on fire. Oh, yeah.
So, in coming to New Zealand, Evelyn, I mean, what sort of responses have you had to your research on your website?
From outright rejection to wonderful, warm embraces. It's been a roller coaster. I've done a lot of commenting on websites such as The Standard, which initially they were so shocked that they wanted to ban me. But thanks to other people who are reading and commenting, they said, hang on a minute, this is a freedom of speech issue. If this is her reality, then she should be allowed to talk about this. And that was 3 years ago, and now I've got a lot of people who say, hang on a minute, she wasn't far wrong. So it's been, especially last year, people are becoming much, much more aware.
It's happening fast, isn't it?
But
yes. It's just strange that some of our critics are the people you think would be our first allies, and then you find allies within the most obscure realms of society sometimes. Isn't it strange how that occurs?
It's weird, because I always thought of myself as sort of like greeny, left side, and my best teammates in the 9/11 truth movement are ex-United States military, and it's a strange schism in people who you think are going to be your the people who stand by you.
Don't get us started on the Green Movement, please. I'm just joking about the Green Movement. But yeah, I mean, you actually believe in like real organic farming, and you're quite kind of self-sufficient, aren't you, Evelyn?
Absolutely, yes, as much as I can. And I have to say, Jeanette Fitzsimmons is very much aware of the whole 9/11 truth movement. Yeah. And yeah.
No, it's good. Aware
of, but she doesn't. She's not publicly in support of the 9/11 truth movement, though, is she?
She has. No, she has.
Has
she bravely met Richard Gage when we had Richard over here, and she got attacked by fake conservatives like David Farrar of KiwiBlog.co.nz, and she was definitely over the target. So I take my hat off to her.
Is that why she retired from Parliament?
No, that was some other factors into there, but.
Well, what I do know is that she signed also the 9/11, a new investigation for 9/11 truth, the politicians list, the worldwide politicians list. that people can look up. So she's really on record as a 9/11 truth supporter. But I do know that especially Keith Locker was and what's his name, Russell, they're both very, very keen on not talking about 9/11. So I don't know what happened, and I'm not going to – I couldn't speculate, but I'm sure there were quite a few discrepancies between her will to learn the truth and the way they wanted to do green politics.
But the green movement as a whole, you talk about, you know, some being a sort of person from the traditional left. The green movement as a whole has just been co-opted, hasn't it? It's just all climate change, and it's just all one. It's just like they're tunnel visioned, and anything you say, it's just climate change. You know, record icing in the northern hemisphere now is climate change. Oh, it was warming. Now they've got this term that encompasses any. You know, a cow could blow over my house and they'll just say, hey, it's climate change. You need to throw your car away and kill yourself.
Yeah, I have to say that I'm going to have people falling all over me left, right and center on this one. But I used to be like climate change, you know, that's true, that's right. Everything has changed because of, and I've just completely gone off that. I'm sure we have huge problems and I try to live sustainably and within a footprint that I think is responsible. If guys like Al Gore can make a billion in 10 years over tax paid on breathing out, then just, you know, it doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, I mean, everybody just kind of needs to follow the money. And if you're talking about climate change, have a look at all the people who are really, really rich who are absolutely for funding it, supporting it. And you'll wind up finding that a lot of them are doing a whole bunch of carbon trading and getting rich off the very idea that they're propagating. So therefore, the idea that they're propagating can't be for the good of humanity. It has to be for the good of their own wallets.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean,
now, speaking
it's just
of people
all about
that,
framing debates, isn't it? It's all about setting up debates. And what do you think of the New Zealand media in general? I just wanted to get your quick comments on that.
Oh, can I say the same thing about that I said about Bomber? I've given up on them. They're useless. Yeah. They are co-opted. They're owned by Fairfax, which is 10% owned by Murdoch. It's all. I actually went with some of the information on John Key to Sender 3, and they were all keen on doing something with it. And 2 days later, it was like, no, can do. Sorry, bye.
They always do that. They always do that. They have intel agencies working directly with them. I mean, there's a Canadian woman up at TVNZ here in Hobson Street, and she's working for SIS. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't bother the public. It's just all freedom, and half the dupes they've got working in that building think there's no censorship.
Yep.
Well, they don't question, really, do they? I mean, they come in, they get their induction. We're about spreading information to the people and making sure that people can make a good decision based on real information, blah, 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 and it's all BS. And this comes to my general knowledge of organizations and corporations. And I've worked in the bottom levels of many of them and talked with the big wigs and whatever. My conclusion is that any organization, regardless of whether or not it's a campaigning organization or whether or not it's a corporation, the people on the front line at the bottom don't have an effing clue about how the company is really run or what its real intentions are, period.
Well, I have a family member who is chairman of New Zealand On Air, and I would say that not even that individual has a clue, if I was to be frank about it. I also have other members of my extended family who are wannabe idiot reporters for some of these mainstream networks. And I tell you what, they're just yuppie scum who love getting a press pass and a company car and going to the socialite parties they get invited to. And that's about it. And everything else is lies to them. That's their truth. That's their reality. That's their perception as reality world. And it's really sad.
It's all about getting drunk and getting laid for them, really. I mean, for goodness sake, they don't care about anything.
They've got a title to wave around at people. It's like a pickup line to them. That's all that matters. They don't care about investigations who killed 3,000 people a few years ago. They don't care. They don't care if over a million Iraqis are dead. Yeah, I mean, how crazy is it, Evelyn, that now we have, what, over 1.5 million people that have been killed in this fake war, started on the premise of a false flag event in New York, and no one's doing anything to stop it, really? I mean, if we're going to be frank about it, everyone just goes about their daily work and just like, oh, well, just a bunch of towelheads, I don't care.
Yep, absolutely, that's how it goes. And, it's, you know, what makes me so sad is that, you know, two guys died last year, in Afghanistan, and they are being celebrated as heroes. And, you know, they are probably heroes. They are people who actually thought they were doing the right thing. And that is what makes it so sad. They're just being used for the whole publicity machine and the whole – it's just disgusting.
It's funny how some lives are worth more than others.
True.
Isn't it?
It's like the whole animal farm complex, you know. It's like, some animals are more equal than others.
Well, that's it, you know. Some weddings get publicized all across all the international networks, like this degenerate inbred family we call the royal family. But, you know, their new freaking King Mason get married this year, and that's going to be all over the place, you know. Some people are more important than others, it seems.
Well, and also there was the enormous Indian-themed wedding that just happened in Auckland, which injected millions and millions of dollars, apparently.
Has that happened already? Economy.
Oh, yes, it's happened already. They had somewhat of a ridiculous shindig.
With Rumsfeld here?
He was invited, but he didn't come because he had other prior engagements, probably, I don't know, legalizing some artificial sweetener that gives people cancer somewhere. Oh, that's just speculation on my part, of course. He had a previous engagement.
We'll get stuck into John Key on the other side, eh, Vinny?
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Our Prime Sinister. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will. Our very special guest is Evelyn Gilbert, and we will be right back.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. Thank you very much to the people who are joining us on our live show chat on the Facebook group, The Vinny Eastwood Show with Will Ryan. And also welcome back to our very special guest, Evelyn Gilbert. Evelyn, welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, getting into the subject of our Prime Minister, John Key, his origins, how did he, well, He's a businessman, right? And like many businessmen, he knows his trade very, very well. What is his trade?
Buying and selling money, or so he says.
Buying and selling money. Sounds awfully simple, so it must be infinitely complicated.
Well, the buying and selling of money in itself, of course, is not. It is the other stuff that he did that makes it so interesting.
Elaborate.
Because, well, he stopped being a buying and selling of money guy quite a long time ago. Before he was a buying and selling money guy until about maybe the early 90s. After that, he became more of a manager, and he led a couple of departments for Merrill Lynch, for example, and another interesting bank, the Bankers Trust Bank.
Yes, yes.
You want me to just go on and tell this story? Good.
Go for your life, please.
Well, the Bankers Trust Bank is interesting for a great many reasons. One of them, because it was one of the most corrupt banks in the world. And they were well ahead into selling and buying derivatives and products that were basically designed to rip people off as much as possible.
And for our audience listening, if you don't know what a derivative is, it's when you call $1, $40 and gamble it on the stock market at 1,000 to 1. Please continue, Evelyn.
Well, he left the Bankers Trust Bank in the early 90s to go to Merrill Lynch after the bank had collapsed because they had been taken to court over these corrupt practices. So he knew very well what the bank was about. Bankers Trust Bank later was involved on the sideline in another scam when a bank aligned to the Bankers Trust Bank started to invest in shares in in American Airlines, etc., just before 9/11. I'm not saying this is what John Key knew about this, but this is the history of this bank. So that was quite an interesting bank, and one that got him involved in one of the earliest scandals that he wants to deny by being involved with, which was in 89. In 88, you had a collapse of the share market in New Zealand in October 1987 on a Monday, was called Black Monday. And a couple of days later, the Bankers Trust Bank had a guy from New York, Andrew Krieger, make an attack on the New Zealand dollar, which made the Bankers Trust Bank $3 million in one afternoon. And the guy on the other side here in New Zealand helping this attack was John Key.
How suspicious.
Yes, and how do I know is what you would like to know probably next.
I would just assume that you know, but elaborate anyway.
Well, what is interesting is that John Key was also accused of being involved in, I wasn't here at the time, so bear with me, but he was involved in insider trading of a railway network, which he denied. Because he said, I was already away to the Bankers Trust Bank, and I was not allowed to work for several months. So he slipped by that.
He had 25,000 shares with Transrail. And
that was later.
He lied three times on air about how many shares he had, ended up over 100,000.
Yes, but that was later. But what happened in they privatized the trains network in the late 80s. And there was rumor of insider trading at the time and people making a lot of money out of it. And John Key was accused of being involved in that. But he said, no, I wasn't. And he wasn't. But what he was involved with was Andrew Krieger and his scam to earn $300 million off the collapsing New Zealand economy and the New Zealand dollar to the point of almost collapsing the New Zealand currency. And John Key denies that he was involved in that. And he said, I only started to work with Andrew Krieger in August 1988. But so I wasn't involved when he was doing all these heavy dealings in millions of dollars. But the point is that Andrew Krieger had already left money trading in January 1988. And the only time John Key could have worked together with him was in roundabout October 1987 when this scam was going down. That was his first scam. This is his first scandal. You can find this out. It was all documented in the New York Times archives online. Which dates all the actions and interactions. So that's undebatable. You can find that back.
Okay. Well, that's scam number one. What's scam number two?
Scam number two is another interesting one. It's I apologize for that one. That's an interesting one too. He was involved. He was at the time working for Merrill Lynch, and all of a sudden the Thai baht started to collapse. That was, I think, in 1996. And do you know his nickname? John Key's nickname, the Smiling Assassin.
I met the daughter of a former employee of his, and the nickname came about because he was a very, very nice guy, you know, very personable and lovely. But as soon as he decided that he didn't like you, or if you made a mistake in business or something, he would turn into an absolute monster and destroy you.
Oh, well, I hope he doesn't find me then. No, well, what happened was he was asked to fire about 200 of his colleagues. Why? Because Merrill Lynch had gotten involved in the collapse of a huge hedge fund, a long-term credit management, it was called. And when the baht was starting to collapse, it almost collapsed the entire banking world of Wall Street. And they had to be bailed out. It was one of the first bailouts, of which we now see many, which told the bankers at the time that no matter what they did, they were going to get bailed out. It was just before the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. And so he was asked by his bosses, you go and fire your colleagues, and you know, we'll make it worth your while. And he did with a smile, and that is what actually gave him the nickname, the Smiling Assassin.
Because he'll give you a heck of a lot of a nice grin before he digs the knife right into your pension fund.
Well, in the two times I met him, I have to say he was a personable guy, very personable. Yes. Much more so than many other like people, you know, much more so than Hannon Clark. And his security detail, you know, they were all just nice guys. It wasn't like it was in Kazakhstan or anything. You can't even play the movie Borat without being exterminated by a government hit team. But, you know, it's a different form of tyranny. It's a sleight of hand. It gives you the illusion of freedom. And he's very good at playing that game. Very good.
Well, that was the second scandal he was involved in. His bank had basically financially collapsed. He was at the time the head of foreign exchange of Merrill Lynch, so he was well aware of the scandal. He was well aware of the kind of speculative investment his bank was involved in. And of course, the third scandal he was involved in was not so much a scandal as it was another bubble, was the real estate bubble, which is now the cause of the final collapse of the Western world. At the time, he was head of foreign exchange worldwide of Merrill Lynch, and he was the head of the bond and derivatives trade of the European department of Merrill Lynch. And he was also part of the small, little-known committee of the Foreign Exchange Committee of the New York Federal Reserve. And before him, his boss had been a part of that committee, together with Robert Rubin, who was an advisor to Clinton and who was instrumental in repealing the Glass-Steagall Act.
Now, just for those who are unaware, what is the Glass-Steagall Act?
The Glass-Steagall Act is the act that prevented big betting banks, such as the Wall Street bankers, and the commercial banks responsible for prudent and responsible lending to entrepreneurs and to house, you know, people who want to buy houses. And when they repealed this act, big Wall Street investment bankers, otherwise known as gamblers and banksters, could get a hold of these commercial banks and start selling mortgages to Tom, Dick, and Harry, no matter what their financial situation, and just sell on those mortgages and make loads of money and recuperate the mortgages that they lend out and leave pension funds, big long-term investment funds that had to be prudent in their investments with the empty promises.
Well, empty promises is something like an economic, well, almost as if it's required, you know? I can't think in any way, shape, or form, I can't remember any Prime Minister in New Zealand who's come in and kept the policies that they said that they were going to, you know?
True, but John Key really didn't make any promises, did he?
Well, he said that he wouldn't put up, what's it called, GST. He did. He said he wouldn't sell state assets in his first term, and to call privatisation of, say, the entirety of Auckland not privatisation is like saying when you're 3 months pregnant, you're not pregnant.
But isn't it funny how he is never there when it actually happens? He's always in Hawaii or somewhere else.
Just in case somebody decides, hey, there's something going on, I'm going to go ask John Key about. Oh, wait, he's in Hawaii. I'm going to go ambush him with a camera. Oh, no, he's in Honolulu.
Exactly. And it's always when this stuff is announced. So it's like his master say, it's better if you're gone now, John, for a couple of weeks, because we're going to go and pull this one out.
Yeah. It's like he doesn't want to be in ground zero when they do the controlled demolition.
Exactly. No. We need you to be the nice guy that people can still turn to and say, oh, he's such a nice guy. It's English who's doing it, or it's, you know, it's always the other guys that are doing it.
Well, it's the same thing Barack H.O. Barry does, isn't it? You know, whenever some terrible thing is about to happen, you notice that Barack H.O. Barry is gone.
Yep.
You know, and it just goes to show that our governments around the world have no difference whatsoever. They're the same type of people who run the countries in the same type of way, always underhanded, and very few people understand it.
Especially here.
Well, you know, the whole New Zealand mantra of, oh, she'll be right, mate, has seen to that, relatively well. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Evelyn Gilbert, and we will be right back momentarily. I want to jump it. I'm the sinister Prime Minister John Key. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about organized crime. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and also giving a big shout out to our listeners in Rush 89 FM and the Tron Hamilton, New Zealand. Welcome back also to our very special guest, Evelyn Gilbert. Now, there were a couple of things that we wanted to cover here in this short segment in the time we have left with you. The unauthorized biography of John Key. The writer left out a few things. What exactly did he leave out?
Well, what is interesting is that a couple of months in July 2007, was that? No, 8. A couple of months before the elections, a article appeared in the New Zealand Herald called The Unauthorized Biography of John Key. And online, this article appeared as a 15-page article about his history, about why he would be good for the country, how he was such a good leader, how he was laid back and allowed other people to take, to perform. And he told in this article, for example, that he was just part of this incredibly wonderful development, and that he was leading this department where they developed all these beautiful newfangled financial instruments. And when I pointed out that these were the bonds and derivatives that were now destroying the financial world to this particular journalist, whose name escapes me at the moment, Eugene, last name escapes me. Anyway, I pointed these out via an open letter that I wrote to him. Within a week, five of those pages with every reference to those connections had been deleted from this, from the website. I was able to find back the hard copy because, of course, the library has to keep the newspapers 4 or 5 years after the event, so that was lucky. And so people who want to have this hard copy can get a copy if they want. But it's very interesting that the media is cooperating to such an extent that, that if there is criticism or if people are pointing things out, that they will actually delete pages of articles that have appeared online about our prime minister.
Hmm. And what else has he done? I mean, we don't have much time left, and I really, really just think that he's, I don't know, there's something about John Key that I don't like. It might be the fact that he's selling our country down the road and eroding all of our sovereignty and privatizing all our assets and enslaving all our people, or it might be something else.
Well, there is an interesting connection you might want to look into. For example, his Procter & Gamble. Not Procter & Gamble, but his Texter, Cosby & Texter. His wonderful PR company. If you look on the website of Texter, Cosby & Texter, you will see that they have a board of directors. And the board of directors consists out of three people, the PR guys and a guy called De Crespigny. De Crespigny used to own the gold mine in Waihi. And he was the director of Normandy Mines, big, big mining company in New Zealand. What's more, the same guy was on the board of a Australian think tank called the Center for International Studies, which accidentally, at that time, she's gone now, had a woman on their board called Ruth Richardson. So if you know that these guys are all in the background vying for John Key's election, then you know what kind of interest he actually does protect and what interest he does support.
Well, you mean, so he was supported by a mining company, and then after he gets elected, he winds up passing legislation that allows more mining in the national parks? What a coincidence!
Yes. The moment I found this connection, I just had to wait until they started to talk about mining.
And of course, yes. He also has shares in Jackson Mining, a gold mining company.
Oh, funny that.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, that's the thing about our brainwashed New Zealand public is that they don't do any investigation. And, I'm one of those people who doesn't do any investigation. I just go and talk to the investigators because, quite frankly, I'm not a very patient man. every time, I can't make it up how bad it is. No matter how bad you could even make up that it is, it's worse.
And what's so amazing is that I find the New Zealand population, they're so sweet. They're so naive. They're so gullible. And it is just so easy for people like John Key and his mates. It is the easiest thing. We're asking for it, as it were.
Because on a societal level, to resist and to have a problem with anything is bad. Because everyone just wants to be happy. Convince themselves they're happy. It's real weak.
We're just ripe grapes hang. We're just basically like the low hanging fruit. We're a wonderful place to come and loot and steal resources and destroy in general.
As Hillary Clinton said, New Zealand is such an easy country to do business with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because we give a heck of a lot of tax incentives to international companies, and if, you know, CEOs decide to turn up with a briefcase and say, hey, you need to take away all your workers' rights, we'll change it in a day for you, because we're just that nice a bunch of fellows.
Absolutely.
As was
the point
case,
is, though, Evelyn, I'm sure you'd agree.
Sorry?
I'm sure you'd agree that we don't need to be borrowing $300 million a week when we can mint our own money
legally.
We can print it ourselves.
They do.
What
all
a joke.
Right, and lastly, Evelyn, do you have a website?
Yes. It's called aotearoawiderperspective.wordpress.com.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on the show with us today. Coming up next hour, ladies and gentlemen, we have Phil Rose from Wellington, 9/11 Truth. Stay tuned.
Stand and be counted, wounded station in the belly of the vulture. Watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, front lines. Listen, consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering. Dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.